Eric Repair is the renowned chef of an equally renowned restaurant, Le Bernardin, in Manhattan. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
Now, Eric, you wrote a book called On the Line, The Stations, yes. The Heat, The Cooks, The Costs, The Chaos, and The Triumphs of a Day in the in Your Restaurant. My first question when I first saw the book was, why did it take you and Le Bernardin so long to write a cook?
I wrote a couple of cookbooks in the past. One of them was called A Return to Cooking.
Okay.
And it was more like an experimentation with other artists in connection with seasons. And then Le Bernardin had a cookbook in 1995 called Le Bernardin 4-Star Simplicity. But I wanted to do On the Line because I wanted to create a documentary of the team, on the life, the team at Le Bernardin, and I wanted to do it in written. So we created this book, and it's basically a VIP pass to go backstage.
Yes, and it's really exciting. There are parts that are just amazing. The average person, as enthralled as everyone is with food and the culinary world, nobody has an idea of the kind of perfection that goes on every day by so many people at Le Bernardin.
I will hope that nobody, no client will have an idea, because it will mean that they will really struggle with their lunch or dinner.
That was, that's for sure.
So it's a little bit like a duck. It's calm on the surface, but there's lots of pedaling going on under the water.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Now, you have a little biographical information in the book as well, in the introduction to the book. Did I read correctly that even when you were starting out, you had your eye on stardom? You wanted to be noticed?
Well, yes, I wanted to be noticed when I was a young cook. And my idol at the time was Paul Bocuse.
Right.
And I wanted to be recognized not just to be a celebrity chef or a celebrity, but I wanted to be recognized for my craft, for my work.
Uh-huh. Well, you certainly are that, that's for sure.
Yeah. I've been lucky, I'll say.
Oh, now, tell me this. I have to ask this. You know I have to ask this. As you indicate that one of the reasons you wrote this book is because your lease is coming up in 2011. Are you telling us that we should read between the lines?
No, but I'm saying that it's going to be a decision that I have to make. And either way, in 2011, Le Bernardin will go on the way it is for several more years, or won't. And we haven't taken the decision yet.
You haven't?
No.
I mean, I would think that probably after all this time, you might be ready to go in another direction, no?
It could be, but you know, I'm very passionate about Le Bernardin. I really enjoy being part of the team and creating what we create today at the restaurant. Then it's true that I am tempted to do other things. So I don't know. We'll see. I have a few years to think about.
Right. Well, you go on about team. You're a team player, and you're big on the team, right?
Yes, because without a team, by yourself, you cannot really do much when you think that you have to serve about 100 people at the same time and have some private rooms being filled also. And so you definitely need a team that is going to support the vision. And I have an amazing team. They have been very loyal and dedicated to create with me what Le Bernardin is today.
Yeah, and you really give them a lot of voice in this book, too. And so, listeners, if you want to know who's behind all the wonderful, perfect dishes that you're receiving at Le Bernardin, you'll enjoy getting to know these people on Eric's team. I find it amazing that you turn out 1,200 dishes a day, and you fill an order. An order goes out every 15 to 30 seconds, and you're able to maintain that kind of quality. It's astounding. And you said 40 cooks in an old kitchen.
Yes, we have about 41 cooks, and altogether we are 140 employees in care of the restaurant.
And seating how many?
Well, we can sit downstairs about 100-110 at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And we open for lunch and dinner 6 days a week, and we have also private rooms that can accommodate up to 100 people as well.
And I think that the timeline is really the big interest of the book, like how the day starts and who arrives and what happens, and followed all the way through to where they the washer comes in and cleans up the kitchens. But the glossary is also interesting for people who want to sort of get to know that all the terminology of like the past and so forth. It's become so common in our culture, foodie culture. So I think that that's a very useful feature.
Yes, I think so too. We sharing the vocabulary that we use with the reader, and some of the vocabulary we use is common in the food industry. Some of it it's more mostly Le Bernardin slang, I would call. And
yeah, there's one I can't remember what it was that I was amazed at because I'd never heard it. You have it in the book. Some slang from Le Bernardin.
Yes. Well, we call the front of the stove uptown.
Oh, that's
and
it.
The back of the stove downtown.
Downtown. That I thought was unusual. You know, can you join me in a campaign to get rid of this American usage of entree?
Entree for
main courses.
Main course?
I can't stand it. You know, I wrote. Go ahead.
I'm still confused. I confuse in between the French and the American very often myself.
I mean, it's how did it happen? I don't know how we got to this thing with the entree. It clearly should be the appetizer.
Yes. It's maybe someone made a mistake a long time ago, and then we all picked up on it and didn't change it.
Maybe it's just the entree to dessert, and that's the reason why. So it's the introduction to the most important part of the meal.
That could be true.
You have a bunch of tips also, such as this testing doneness with the metal skewer and then putting it on your face.
Well, not necessarily on your face, but on your chin, because the chin is fairly sensitive. And we use skewers, metal skewers, because they diffuse the heat pretty well. And if the skewer comes back when we insert it through the flesh of the fish, when it comes back, if it's really hot, it means the fish is overcooked. When it's cold, it means it's not cooked. And when it's warm, it's cooked to perfection.
That's brilliant. That's wonderful.
It's very basic, but it works.
Yes. You have a lot of tips in a book like that, and then like sauce secrets where you clarify with the egg whites and so forth. It's taken a while to get to this point, isn't it?
To this point, what do you mean by that?
Of everything at such an incredibly meticulous level, and everybody plays by the same rules.
Yes, absolutely. It's kind of, I see this book almost as a legacy, so it took my entire life to really be able to be at the level where we are today, and the book really is witnessing that progress, acknowledge what we do today at the level of where we are.
Yeah. Now, what do you feel that you would like to have done or you would still like to do that you haven't done to this point?
It's a hard question, this one.
It's a hard question for you.
I think I have done in my life whatever I wanted, really. I have been very lucky, and any vision that I had has materialized. I have been rewarded for it, and I'm still having tremendous fun with what we do at Le Bernardin, and it's really a dream come true.
Now, let Peter ask a question, because Anne got all researched here, and of course he's much more organized than I am. But one of the things that interests me is what does it feel like to be so famous? I mean, the chef as a superstar was very well written up by Michael Ruhlman, who I think is probably a good friend of yours, in one of his books. And you're talking to us very humbly, and not a little bit the star, but most people will know Eric Ripert, the incredibly handsome young man who is recognizable wherever he goes. Does that make you comfortable, uncomfortable? What's it like?
Well, first of all, being perceived as a good-looking man doesn't really help in the kitchen.
No, but it must be kind of different. It must be kind of different on the street. I mean, do you get recognized on the street? I mean, does that?
Yeah, I don't. You know, I don't really see the famous aspects. I you know, every morning I leave my house. I walk through Central Park for 45 minutes, and I go to work. I barely see anyone in the park at that time, and you know, as soon as you enter your kitchen or the restaurant, it's no glamour. I have to deal with the reality of the life of the restaurant, and it's certainly not glamorous at all. And I'm interacting with the team. Obviously, I'm interacting with the clients during lunch and dinner, and you know, we have some fun dialogues in between clients and I. But I don't feel stardom. I don't feel anything like that in my life. I have a very simple life. And nobody stops in the street to make me sign an autograph.
Oh, no? I would think you're so distinctive looking that you would have that happen.
Doesn't happen. I don't have to leave Le Bernardin through the back door because it's a groupie is waiting for me.
What about Todd English? I think he probably has groupies.
maybe Todd. I don't know. We have to ask him, but it doesn't happen to me.
I see.
Now, this is a... For those people, of course, who are living on another planet, we should note that Le Bernardin is, of course, in New York City, and it's on West 57th Street, I think.
Yes.
And it's one of the unique things about it is that it serves almost entirely seafood, but you do have one meat on your menu, and it turns out it's produced by a friend of ours not more than 50 miles from here.
Oh, yes?
I'm talking about John Jamison's John
lamb.
And Suki Jamison's
lamb.
Sure.
For sure, yes.
Well,
sure.
Now,
sure.
Actually, their daughter did a stage with you, didn't she?
I think she did.
She did.
Eliza.
She worked for us.
Oh, she worked for you, Eliza.
She was in our staff.
Right, yeah.
So what made you create that unusual exception?
Because by respect for clients and for convenience, because sometimes we have big tables coming to Le Bernardin, and there's 6 or 8 or 10 people, and the host knows that we are serving mostly only seafood, but some of the guests are not necessarily aware, and some of them dislike seafood, so we don't want to impose on them.
Okay.
What do you deal with? I just read an article saying that bluefin tuna is now on the endangered list. How do you manage to keep your fish choices up there? And there are certain favorites, I'm sure, that everybody would expect to find, but there's so many cycling off into sustainability issues now.
Yes, well, we are very sensitive to what's going on in the world, and we have a close relationship with organizations that are monitoring the species, and when one fish is endangered, we actually write on our menu that we do not serve that species.
Uh-huh.
On our menu, I think right now we have about 5 or 6 different fishes that we are listing, saying, you know, those fishes are on the verge of disappearing.
Oh, I'm sure that the numbers are going up and up and up, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's gotten just gross, I think. And talking about numbers here...
Well, you know, governments, when they are pressured properly and educated, they really do a good job in opening and closing fisheries, in regulating in the strongest way what's going on. So I'm hopeful, really, at the end of the day, I'm hopeful that in between the organization pressuring governments and knowledgeable people, the fish will be okay in a few years from now and actually not disappearing.
Eric, the obvious question here is, to me it is an obvious question, is like, I know who some of the people you hang with, but like, who are your heroes currently? I know about Bocuse, but what about now?
Well, I admire very, very much Joël Robuchon.
Oh, yes, he's wonderful.
I'm sorry?
I said he's wonderful, yeah.
Yes.
Mashed potatoes.
It's incredible. So Joël Robuchon is definitely on top of the list. And I have, you know, a lot of respect for Thomas Keller and for Daniel and for Jean-Georges.
Oh, great, yeah.
You know, and in a new generation of chefs like Grant Achams in Chicago. I mean, I respect and I admire nice people who have talent.
And I was going to ask you also, when you have all these people, you get endless numbers of requests for employment and so forth. How do you, you mentioned in your book about what you're looking for, but how do you identify in these very young chefs who really has the talent, who's gifted?
Well, you never really know at the interview, but what we're looking for is, first of all, people who come for interviews most of the time have been recommended by other chefs, and then we want to make sure that they are humble, hardworking, clean, and we want to make sure that they can be a team player. And then if we see that in them, then we are willing to teach them, pass the knowledge to them.
And, you know, to mentor them and so forth. And what do you see in our future for the, is there a new type of restaurant like the casual small, like David Chang's? I mean, where do you think we're going with the restaurant industry?
Well, I think, you know, the restaurant industry is always going to have casual places and always places to celebrate in a more official way or serious way. And you always will have luxurious restaurants with more formality and restaurants with less formality. And I don't see the industry really alienating itself from one aspect of the spectrum to another. I see the industry as a whole with all those different components. And it's true that casual will be more and more, because more and more people go out to restaurants on a daily basis almost in big cities. And then the formal restaurants are actually in New York City, for instance, are very busy despite the recession. The luxurious restaurants are doing well because it's always business going on. It's always people who want to celebrate with style.
Right. Well, I guess we'll wait and see then. And we'll wait till 2011 to see what happens at Bernadette and what happens with Eric Repair. And in the meantime, listeners, you can go to On the Menu Radio and order the book called On the Line, and it's on our OTM bookshelf. Good luck with your book, Eric. And I don't know what's taken us so long to actually get together and talk.
Well, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate the conversation, and I hope we will have many more.
Oh, that's great. I like that. Thank you so much, Eric.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.